are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, McKay Coppins, the Atlantic magazine, writing in the Columbia Journalism Review, "What if the right-wing media wins?" Also on the program today, Republicans in the bunker mentality. Meanwhile, the generals worry about Trump and nukes. 1,000-plus ISIS fighters surrendered to the Kurds. And a transpartisan bill introduced in the House to withdraw from Yemen. Harvey Weinstein, done. Ladies and gentlemen, and the United Labor Union files a complaint versus the Cowboys owner over forcing his players to stand for the national anthem. Lastly, Mark Zuckerberg apologizes, still doesn't get it. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just play this quick clip here because I don't know if there's anything that sums up where we're at quite like this when the spokesperson for the State Department, actually, there's multiple clips that I guess suggest this. This is a spokesperson from the State Department. She's the former Fox News morning personality, of course, turned State Department spokeswoman. And, she is asked a question about the Secretary of State.
Apropos of nothing, what's the Secretary's IQ?
It's high. Is anybody it? Who can put things together, you know, when it's an
don't,
engineer,
you don't have a,
it's high.
You
don't, I don't.
You,
I don't,
you don't have an exact that. Score. You know, what he might have gotten on his SATs, anything like that? No.
Do you have a real question?
Yeah, Turkey.
Right. Apparently, that is a real question. The president was making assertions about their relative IQs, so that became important. That's just give you a sense. And for those of you who watch or listen to this program overseas, I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. All right, you know, we got time for one more that I think captures this. But before we do, I want to talk about this because before we get to McKay Coppins, as you know, as far as I was concerned last year, at this time, that if you didn't need, if you needed, or I should say, one needed no other reason to vote for Hillary Clinton for president over Donald Trump than that one seat on the Supreme Court. And then you can layer in from there the next seat on the Supreme Court and perhaps the next one after that. And the 100-some-odd-plus federal judiciary vacancies, which are now, incidentally, significantly more than just 100. They're at 149 vacancies. Upcoming resignations will put the vacancies to 166. You will have entire federal circuit benches filled with a majority of Republicans for at least a generation, maybe two. And writing in, I don't know where this guy writes. Fred Barnes, apparently, also, I should say, is still alive. And he is writing. And this is indicative of the bunker mentality that the Republicans are in right now. Later in the program, we'll talk about what's happening with the other Republican lawmakers. But this is the most important aspect of what's going on. Aside from, of course, Donald Trump perhaps maybe getting us into some type of nuclear confrontation. Mitch McConnell has made it the number one priority of the Senate to confirm judicial nominees. They're not as worried about legislation. They're not worried about filling the Assistant Secretary of State or the other literally, I don't know, it could be hundreds of positions that still need confirmation in our government. The only thing they care about is getting as many judges sitting on the federal bench as possible. So he is scheduling that, making those a priority. He's also no longer honoring blue slips. You will recall there was a huge logjam of judges under the Obama administration because it has been Senate tradition for I don't know how many decades that the senator of a state in which a judge is up for confirmation on any given circuit. Now, remember how many states Republicans control can withhold a blue slip of paper, I guess, and essentially make that nomination go nowhere if they disagree with the judge. This was done constantly when Democrats controlled the Senate. Many people said to Patrick Leahy, who was the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, don't honor these anymore. And of course, the institutionalism won out until, of course, Mitch McConnell became the Senate leader. The use of blue slips, he said, is not a Senate rule. It's been honored in the breach over the years. Now it won't be honored at all. Technically, you need Grassley, who is the chair of the Judiciary Committee, to also kill it, but they'll do it. He's also getting rid of, or at least bypassing, the 30 hours rule, which provides for 30 hours of debate on a nominee. He's going to figure out how to do that scheduling-wise. And yet, he's still getting grief from various conservative outlets that want to get rid of him. From the Judicial Crisis Network, from the Conservative Action Project. FreedomWorks is demanding McConnell step down. But he knows why he's there. And this is essentially like, this is the moment where you're in the bunker. You see the tanks coming from the attacking army and you start burning all of the papers in there. This is what he's doing. He's got 15 months now until January of 2019, when there's a slight, highly unlikely, but possible chance that they would lose the Senate. And this is what they want to get accomplished. Literally decades of conservative control of the federal judiciary. I don't care what proposals you think you have for government. If five justices of the Supreme Court say, hey, guess what? Single payer? That's not constitutional. It won't happen. And I don't think we have those five justices now. We don't. If Kennedy leaves, or one of the liberal judges left the center, let's say, judges leave, you're going to get close to five judges, we'll say that. If two of them leave, that's Johnny Ballgame until someone gets hit by a bus. For anybody who's alive hearing my voice now, anyways. Because a 45-year-old sitting on that court is going to be there for 40 years. So just keep that in mind if you have a time machine and can go back in time and need to reevaluate your vote in Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania in particular. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But you know what? Let's play one more clip here, because this is also indicative of what's going on. Gabe Sherman was on Chris Hayes last night, and I think what's happening is that Bob Corker is shaking loose some stories that we wouldn't otherwise hear. And nobody's coming out. There's no elected Republican official in the country who is not resigning that is going to speak out against Donald Trump, because something like 96% of those people who voted for Donald Trump in the Republican primary would vote for him again today. And I think when we talk to McKay Coppins, we're going to understand why. But the stories are starting to shake loose a little bit. And they're, of course, all anonymously sourced. But Gabe Sherman's been pretty good with his sources in the past. I think there's a half a dozen people at Fox, or formerly at Fox News, who would agree with that assessment. Here he is. He's not with Variety, is he? Gabe Sherman isn't with, no, I think he's with, maybe he is. Here he is on Chris Hayes' program.
I just want to, you know, sort of put into context the conversation I had with a very prominent Republican today who literally was saying that they imagine General Kelly and Secretary Mattis have had conversations about if Trump lunged for the nuclear football, what would they do? Would they tackle him? I mean, literally physically restrain him from putting the country at sort of perilous risk. And that is the kind of situation we're in. And so, yes.
Wait, that's a conversation you had with a very senior Republican, yes, musing about what
who
they
knows
would
that
do.
That, who is talking about these are the conversations that they have very good authority are taking place inside the White House.
That's a little disturbing. That's a little disturbing, I guess. I don't know. I guess it would be more disturbing if we heard, like, people think he's going to lunge for the nuclear football and nobody's going to stop him.
Or they, like, installed, like, a Fox News app on the nuclear football that he can watch. That would be more disturbing.
But. Or they, what would be less disturbing is that they figured out they're just going to surround the nuclear football with TVs that will distract him as he gets closer. I do wonder if there's some type of protocol where if the president has said a certain word, like, I command to see the nuclear football or something like that, then the protocol is such that nobody can interfere with him. But they could literally tackle him before he gets to saying those words. I don't know. It's really sad that we have to contemplate that, but that's where we're at. Gabe Sherman, Vanity Fair. Somebody, I guess, in the office was editorializing about the quality of Vanity Fair. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, McKay Coppins.
Check for calls. Blink your eyes. I won't forget.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program staff writer for The Atlantic magazine, contributing to the Columbia Journalism Review with the piece, "What If the Right-Wing Media Wins?" McKay Coppins. McKay, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right. I am becoming increasingly obsessed again, as I was probably 10, 15 years ago now, to the implications of the right-wing media, and particularly in this day and age, because we have, you know, someone who could be a right-wing media personality as president, or at least it seems to get most of his talking points from there. And you make the argument that there has been, I mean, what is it? Just give me the broad stroke. Is it that there has been a sort of a fundamental shift in the agenda of the right-wing media?
Yeah, well, I think two things have happened. One is that the conservative media complex as a whole has, in the past few years, and especially in the Trump presidency, become much larger, more powerful, more influential, because we have a president, as you mentioned, who takes his cues from right-wing media. So that's one thing that's happened. The second thing is that their agenda has shifted, or at least they've become more overt about what their agenda has been all along in a way that I think is potentially dangerous. And that's what I get into in this Columbia Journalism Review article. That it used to be, for a long time, the conservative media and conservatives in general, people like Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, they spend a lot of their time, as you know, attacking the mainstream media. But they always at least claimed that they had a kind of civic-minded rationale for it. They said that our goal is to reform the mainstream media. What we want is a more fair and objective news in this country. They said that it was too biased toward liberals. Now, whether you thought that was disingenuous or not, I argue that it was at least there was value in maintaining the pretense, because it kind of supported the broad consensus we've had in this country since World War II that our country works best, our democracy works best, with a robust nonpartisan press. What's changed in the last couple of years is that conservatives, especially kind of the ascendant figures on the right wing media, have basically dropped that pretense. I start the piece with an anecdote with Matt Boyle, who's a Washington editor for Breitbart. And he's at the Heritage Foundation speaking to a bunch of young up and coming conservatives, you know, the next generation of Tucker Carlson's and Megyn Kelly's. And he says, his quote is, "Journalistic integrity is dead. There is no such thing anymore. So everything is about weaponizing, or the weaponization of information." And he says, "We envision a day when the New York Times closes its doors. We envision a day when CNN is no longer in business." He comes out and says, "Our goal is the complete destruction of the mainstream media," by which I think they mean basically the destruction of nonpartisan journalism.
All right. So, you know, I mean, this is fascinating to me because, I mean, for a couple of reasons, because on some level, the reason why I'm doing this show came out of a desire on some level to actually weaponize information, obviously not from the right, but from the left. I mean, I started my career in AM talk radio. I subscribe to the notion that, in fact, this is not a fundamental shift, but it's just like stage three, right, of a plan where sure. where you can be more explicit about it and you can afford to be, because stages one and two of the plan were successful enough that you can actually articulate this agenda. I remember, you know, back specifically when you know, a guy like Duncan Black, Atrios, would write in 2004, 2005, We have problems with the media. What the media doesn't understand is that when we attack them, we are actually just asking them to uphold certain editorial standards. When the right attacks them, they're trying to destroy them. But like you say, I don't know if that's as important, other than the fact that I think the consensus was simply held up because the project had not moved along as much. You know what I mean?
I think that that's
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to that. I think that that's true. And so maybe fundamental shift is not the right word. Like I said, I think a lot of this is just conservatives being more transparent about what their goal has been all along. But I do think that, I mean, we've seen it, you know, you can look at any number of metrics, but we've seen the deterioration of the mainstream media's credibility, their financial stability over the last, you know, decade and a half. And there are a lot of things that have contributed to that. It's not just, you know, conservatives going after it. But I do think that the project now is to undermine journalism. And I yes. want to make a point here before I move on. I don't think there's anything wrong with opinion journalism, and I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, just straight up, you know, having an agenda and advocating for it with these media platforms, whether it's what you do or it's online or social media or with, you know, whatever. That's all fine. That's part of the political process. I think that's good. I think the difference is that there are people on both left and right who are operating with good faith, who want the mainstream media to be better, and then also want to add their voice as a voice of advocacy. Then there's what Breitbart and others are doing, which is they want to replace journalism itself with what they're doing. And I spent a lot of time talking to conservative media figures for this piece, and they will tell you, even the most kind of responsible, the more responsible good faith actors in this world will say, look, the whole idea of media objectivity is a relatively new one. And the idea of a nonpartisan press has only emerged in the last, you know, half century or so. And they kind of advocate for a return to the journalistic conventions of centuries past where, you know, news was delivered by publications that were essentially organs of political parties or ideological movements. So that's where a lot of them want to see the media landscape moving.
Yeah, I think that point that they are working to undermine journalism, I think, is the key. And my answer to, you know, and I think it was Ben Shapiro who made that point in your piece about, you know, neutral journalism is a relatively mm-hmm. new phenomenon. So isn't, I mean, to be fair, like, you know, indoor plumbing. You know, and right. things like antibiotics and basic.
There are a lot of relatively recent developments that we don't want to abandon as a society.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly. And I do think that journalism, is the idea of journalism, the idea of reporting and. You know, it's fine. I subscribe to the sort of the you mentioned the Jay, I can't remember his name now, but a professor from NYU.
Oh, Jay Rosen.
Jay Rosen's yeah. perspective of, like, you know, be transparent about the perspective mm-hmm. that you're coming from, because everybody's a human being and you're going to come from some type of perspective. But the undermining, I think you're absolutely right, is the fundamental issue. And this, to me, seems also... And you track the attacks on the press, at the end, you give like a little bit of a timeline. But this has also been a major project. You look back to like someone like Gertrude Himmelfarb, Bill Kristol's mm-hmm. Mom, was the attacks on science were rooted in the same idea that you don't want any type of objective arbiters to exist. Mm-hmm. Because then it's much harder to make an argument.
Yeah, no, and what I was kind of amazed by is the, I talked to Ann Coulter for this piece, which she's not a journalist, obviously, and I don't think considers herself one, but she was basically pretty upfront about the reality of what you just said. She basically said, I don't want any neutral. Referees in the news landscape. I don't want people who are fact-checking and debunking falsehoods and adding context and not taking sides. She said, I want all of us to start arguing about issues and ideas, and everyone has to take a side, and that's what'll be best for the country. I mean, that is an actual pretty popular and increasingly popular worldview on the right. And I think that's dangerous.
It's super dangerous because my speculation is the reason why that is a tenable position. I mean, and I wanted to ask you one question. I'll just put a pin in it for a second. But why I think that's a tenable position is because there's a lot more money for that project on the right than there is on the left. It's not even remotely close.
Well, I think that is true. I think that this piece goes through kind of the history of Republican efforts to undermine journalism and the critiques of journalism. And I actually think some of their critiques have been fair over the years. But what that's yielded was a massive conservative news and media and information and entertainment complex with an explicit agenda and bias and a ton of money flowing toward it. And part of it is, market demands. There have been conservatives who have been frustrated with the mainstream media for a long time and have also been, frankly, conditioned pretty cynically by Republican politicians to not trust it. But there's also a lot of, kind of murky money coming from billionaires, conservative billionaires, that goes toward funding these projects. And you're right. If you're a young conservative who wants to get into journalism and media and you're coming out of college, you kind of have a choice to make. And one choice, one option is to go pursue a normal journalistic career. You go work at a newspaper or a TV network. And the other is to go into the conservative media. And often, especially at the beginning, those jobs that are offered at these right-wing outlets are paying a lot more and promising a lot more visibility at the outset. And I think that's why you see so many young conservatives going into it.
And I think that's a phenomenon. And I think the big thing that's changed, that's allowed them to be so explicit and to have grown in such power, is social media. And I include in that like YouTube and Facebook. I mean, these are platforms, and guys, even like, even the funding that goes to people ranging from like Gavin McGinnis to Dave Rubin, to the Breitbart Radio. I mean, through the spectrum there, okay, that comes from Koch brothers or comes from Mercers or comes from people whose names I don't even know, who drop, $100,000, $50,000 can buy you a YouTube channel that, feeds into the entire sort of ecosystem in a way that, it's like we're going to drop a hull of a ship off the coast of the ocean and just shit's just kind of start building on it like a reef.
Yeah, this is just economics, right? The barrier to entry is so much lower to have an influential media outlet than it was even, 20 years ago. You don't have to buy a printing press. You don't have to buy a TV station, lay the groundwork. You don't have to have infrastructure. It really is. I mean, you have to have an internet connection and somebody to produce content, and often they come pretty cheap. This is part of the thing that worries me. Part of the thing that I wrote is I tried to imagine what the world will look like if the right-wing media wins, if the people who want, nonpartisan journalism to just fade away, what would that look like? And one of the things I think is that that will happen is that kind of inevitably the rich and powerful who can afford to buy and bankroll their own personal, publications will benefit the most, because it's very easy to, have buy influence in this kind of new media landscape.
And I would argue, because let me ask you this question then, because this, I think, will bring out this point. I mean, if you had set out to do this exact same piece, but instead interviewed, a left of center to, to moving to the left, well, how do you think it would be different? Because, people would say like, well, Jeff Bezos, he's funding the Washington Post. And my argument is, I mean, my argument would be like, there are not figures on the left who are willing to fund these type of projects like they are on the right. You know, like Air America launches, it didn't get a dime from the Democracy Alliance.
Yeah.
It didn't get, I don't know if we got even any, I don't even know if we got a dime even secondhand from Soros. It's just that type of stuff is distasteful on the left. And
well, I wonder, I mean, hasn't Soros though funded like investigative journalism things? I don't actually know enough.
No. I think he has. But that's my point, is that on the right, there are people who will fund using information, weaponizing information.
Yeah, right.
But on the left, that analog doesn't
exist. The projects are fundamentally different. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that it's funny because I wrote a piece a few months ago for The Atlantic, where I, it's my day job, about the kind of to the extent that there was a parallel or kind of a corollary on the left, it's very small right now, right? There are, in the Trump era, there's been kind of a flourishing of, left wing or hyper partisan liberal, Facebook pages or whatever. Yep. But the reach that they have, and I think that they, there's danger to that too. But it's so much smaller. On the right, it's so much further along to the point where they basically elected a president from this world. On the left, it's kind of just getting started. I think it's something to keep an eye on there. But the reach is so much bigger on the right than anything that does the kind of same stuff on the left.
I will say in 2005, I think it was Joshua Green writing in The Atlantic. I remember this piece because it stuck out for me, was issuing this warning to the left. Be very careful about Air America because they could grow into. That was my response at the time too, but this is why I think there is something fundamental about the left that cannot be cannot be analogous to what the right does, because at the time they were like, you got to be careful because you don't want this to get away from them like Rush Limbaugh. Now this is 10 years ago, right?
Right.
Before the 1,000 losses across the country, before Rush Limbaugh spawned, in many respects, Donald Trump, he's a radio, his talking points come from radio as much as Fox News. Now I think he's sitting in an office more. But, and the idea was be concerned about this. I agree, there's definitely stuff happening on the left, but it will not ever get the funding that we see on the right. It will not happen. It did not happen even remotely close to the radio in radio. Which
I was going
to
say, you've been on the front lines of this, right? So
the money all came.
About the economics here.
The money all came from basically, what we would call in the independent film business, dentist money, where there was no, where it was just like, one guy's like, hey, I'm from Silicon Valley. I want to go to Ariana Huffington's parties. I'm going to give money to this with no concept of what they were doing. And then there was a series of owners like that. There were five owners in 5 years. And so there was no.
Whereas on the right, they're much more sophisticated and it comes from billionaires. Right?
Exactly. It's venture capital style. And it's like, here's the money. I'm gonna seed 1,000 flowers, and the one that the top 10 that bloom the tallest, you're gonna get more money, and that's it, and that's the way it works. And there's nothing analogous to that on the left. Nothing.
I think that's basically right. But I will echo my Josh Green, formerly of The Atlantic. The only thing I will say is that I'm reluctant to say it to completely be lulled into a false sense of security. I think that people on the left should be careful, right? Just keep an eye out for the spreading of, liberal conspiracy theories.
No. I agree with that.
Right?
Believe me, I spend half my time doing that. But I'm just telling you that to the extent that they're funded, right? It is not coming. It is completely organic. The money is not coming. The only sort of left version of that has received outside funding would be the Young Turks. And their major investment up until about 3 months ago was from a former Republican governor. It was from Buddy Romer.
That's right.
And then, and now the money is just coming from media. There's no politics behind that. There's no one out there who's like, you know, they may give, lean left and give money to Democrats, but for them, it's not a political project at all. Whereas, you know, Koch funded think tanks give money to these outfits, it's not like I'm doing this for the entertainment value of the Lost Boys or whatever they call themselves. But yes, I agree that there's problem, but the funding mechanism, because what happens if we do enter that world? And I think to a certain extent we're there, because you're right, it's easier than ever for news consumers to ensconce themselves in hermetically sealed information bubbles and ignore revelations that challenge their worldviews. I am quite convinced that we have now entered into that era, that for an enormous amount of the country, they get in their car, they have no option but to listen to right-wing talk radio. They get to their work. Maybe they go get a haircut. Fox News is playing at the barbershop. Fox News has far more clearance, particularly in large swaths of the country. They go home. They watch their 6 o'clock news. It's a Sinclair Media news station. They have no idea they're getting any type of bias. And then they turn on Fox. And when Donald Trump says something that we all think is insane, or if he even walks back something, that just gives them the option of which one of those takes they're going to use for the narrative they're constructing. And it is a completely different reality than what the rest of us are living in, even under the auspices of, like, you know, what you and I would agree is sort of some form of like neutral journalism, as much maybe we have an issue with this or we have an issue with that, but that there's actually some type of journalistic integrity to it. I think there's vast swaths of the country that are living exclusively in a conservative bubble and don't even have the opportunity. It's not even self-selected. Like, I might go watch MSNBC and listen to Sam Cedar's podcast or, you know, the radio show or something, but you have to make an effort to do that. In large swaths of the country, I don't even think they realize they're making an effort to do that. It's just like, oh, that's news.
Well, I think that's true. I write about how one of the fears that I have in this era is the way that news has ceased to function as a means of information and enlightenment, and instead has just become fodder for, you know, political debates that play out endlessly on Twitter and Facebook. Like, basically, I think that people are, you're right, ensconced in these hermetically sealed bubbles. I would argue that it happens on the left as well, but we don't have to argue about this that much. But there are people who 98% of their media consumption is just validating what they already believe. And then, and increasingly what I think is interesting is the way the battlefields where right and left clash are kind of, you know, your aunt's Facebook feed, right? Your Facebook page. And that's where you see this kind of laid bare, where people are just parroting talking points from, you know, Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson or whatever. And they don't even realize in a lot of cases that they're making controversial claims here. They're just saying what they've heard constantly every single day on Fox News or on talk radio, and just assume that this is kind of what everyone believes, that this is that these are the facts. And this is my fear, that I talk about, you know, our country, the whole idea of the marketplace of ideas only works if reality is serves as the regulating force. There has to be a broadly agreed upon set of facts that everyone's starting from, and I don't think that that's happening
anymore. Well, yes, I guess what I'm arguing is that there's another thing that can screw up the marketplace of ideas, and that is if there is a player that is much larger than other players. I mean, so let's envision what goes forward, because your piece is about, like, you know, what will this look like? And what I'm suggesting is that, and I agree with you, there's, like I say, there are, you can be in a left-wing media bubble. But I think, largely you're not necessarily aware of that. But, uh, but, but the size of those bubbles are just so, so dramatically smaller that what we perceive as a fundamental shift in the way that conservative media views journalism is really, in my mind, a function of scale. That the only thing that's changed between now and 10, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, is that it's grown. It's grown to the point where it has, you know, like, I mean, I wrote a book about this in 2006, that the margins of the Republican Party were now moving to the center. And we are now 10 years later. And I think that's, like, you know, indisputably the case, right? I mean, where Pat Toomey, who was the crazy guy who was primarying Arlen Specter, is now, like, he's part of the genteel, you know, part of the Republican Party.
Yeah, right, right.
And I do think that the, you know, the left has moved to the left. But in terms of its apparatus, the one on the right is so outsized that it produced a president. And if we enter into this era that you're talking about, the dynamics on the money is not going to change. You may have a
I think you're right to a point, but I want to reserve final judgment until we're a little further into the Trump presidency. Because one thing I will say is that what was amazing for this conservative media complex, the kind of factor that drove its growth more than anything, was probably the Obama presidency, that they had a villain to go after every day, right? And so a lot of money flowed into the conservative media over the past 8 years, 10 years. I do wonder if, you know, the New York Times had a piece about all the money that's going into fund the quote unquote resistance, all the different liberal groups.
Indivisible could barely get money. Even Indivisible.
I do wonder if at some point, you know, somebody comes up with a good pitch for, like, we need $100 million for a serious, you know, resistance news network. And if they don't get that funding.
I got to tell you, like, I sat in this office and I said in November, I said, listen, within 3 or 4 months, we will probably hear from people about building something. And no, there's nothing. I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, there's nothing. And it's not like this is that big of a world, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I'm aware.
You would know if it was happening.
I'm aware of everybody who does this for a living. And, you know, maybe there's some secret thing that's going on out there, but I don't think so. I mean, this is, you would think, right? I mean, you would think, but, and, you know, when you look at the proliferation of not just obviously Fox News and Breitbart's and what's happening with, like, YouTube and, but also when you start to think of, like, these other, like, I don't know, WorldNet Daily Network, there's like 3 or 4 of those things that are growing.
Yeah.
And
Newsmax. Really big. Yeah.
I mean, it really is stunning. And I'm quite convinced, like, there's nowhere in the country where you could go and get, well, there's no left-wing radio. There's MSNBC for your left-wing television, but we're really only talking about 3 or 4 programs at night, right? I mean, the rest are dominated by business journalists and former Republicans. I mean, half of the network is former Republicans. You know, even if I watch Chris Hayes tonight, I can tell you that if I'm not on, it's going to be Jennifer Rubin or I rail against the conspiracy minded folks on the left, but that's just because we're fighting over, you know, scraps. And it's important at this stage, you know, you can lose 10% if you've got a big chunk of what's going on. But I worry, not only do I worry that we're headed into an era where something like the New York Times or even CNN. You know, I mean, I'm looking at a picture of like the most important story of the day is that Hillary Clinton hasn't said anything about Harvey Weinstein until day five.
Right,
like,
right,
I just,
right.
I'm not convinced of that. But even I worry about the loss of that reportage, because then I can, you know, if that goes away, the vacuum is not going to be filled by, you know, left wing Fox. It's just not going to exist.
Well, so this is my pitch when I've been talking about this piece. This is the pitch that I make to audiences on the left and the right, but especially the left. Because I know that you know your listeners and a lot of people are worried about this trend that I've documented in this piece. And my pitch is, if you want to fight that, don't just support more liberal media or left wing media. I mean, do that if you feel like it's important, obviously. But also subscribe to the Washington Post, the New York Times, subscribe to your local newspaper.
They already
do. Like,
I can assure
you. Well, I'm just saying that's what. The best thing I think for the left and people on the right who are operating in good faith is for there to be a robust press that is nonpartisan at just contributing facts and context and information to the conversation for then you guys to take and do with it what you will.
But what happens? What's the next step? Like, I mean, we're watching these outlets start to diminish in reach and power. What happens next? Because, like, this has been what the center to the left has always said, right? And it's not working.
Well, so one thing that I think could start happening maybe 5 years down the line, maybe sooner, is that some of these, objective, neutral, nonpartisan news outlets are going to have their backs up against the wall. They're be in very dire financial straits and are going to decide that they need to pivot and become more ideological, that they need to identify the core market audience niche that they're targeting and then just start, producing content for them. I think some of them will become more liberal. Some of them will probably become more conservative. Some of them will, maybe drop news altogether and just cover, right. Celebrity stuff or whatever. But I think that's my fear is that I'm not talking about the New York Times necessarily, though. I think that it could happen there, but a lot of these kind of mid-tier, news outlets are going to reimagine themselves as ideological media companies because they think that that's the way to go. I'm not actually convinced that will save them, but I think that I can see that kind of misguided calculus being done by a lot of media executives.
Interesting. Well, I guess we'll see. God bless us all. McKay, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. We will put a link at Majority FM to your piece in the Columbia Journalism Review.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sam.
Thanks
I appreciate
lot.
It.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. Interesting. And I think he was one of those like more conservative. I don't know if he's actually conservative, but I think like he went in. I mean, he's always been a very good journalist.
He had a lot of sources for like Paul Ryan and stuff in the lead up. He had a book leading into 2016 campaign about a lot of the main Republicans.
Right. I don't know, man. I get more and more nervous about this every day. Like I'm quite convinced that there it would not be hard to run into a lot of people out in, your neck of the woods, Michael, and Mac, Michael, Matt, Jesus. Too many people in here. I can't even. Did you do the yawn thing? Oh my God. I wish that was on camera. That was awesome. That just completely slammed Michael.
Just impersonated the
totally.
Impersonator.
That was great. In your neck of the woods, I wonder. I do think that you just walk into people just a complete bubble now.
I think I listened to Minneapolis radio, KFAN. It was a sports station, but they had a lot of Minnesota liberals in, and I listened to that like all the time and even taped it. And I think that that media connection was big for me,
right,
like, as a high schooler.
That's how you ended up here. Mm-hmm. It's very possible. I mean, does anybody remember Indy Mike, who we would have on? Were you not here when we had? Oh my gosh! So Indy Mike is the guy I would get in email fights with all the time, and he was one of those guys. Like, I listened to all sides. I listened to Bill Hemmer and to Ann Coulter. And he was like, there are no facts. That is what they've been learning on the right for long. There are no facts. And it's a bit of a problem.
Well, facts aren't fun.
They're just no facts.
And they're not
just
pleasant.
Like your opinions.
Like, if you're on that side of things, facts suck. I just ignore them too.
Jamie, you look like you're about, you're like, you want to talk about facts?
I mean, do you really want to know my opinion?
Of course. Why? You think there are facts? You think there are no facts?
I mean, getting mad at the ruling class for controlling the media is like getting mad at a cat for being an asshole. Like, if you don't want an asshole cat, maybe don't have a cat.
Well, all right. Fair enough. I mean, I guess it's not a question of... In this instance, I mean, it's not a question of being mad at the ruling class for controlling media. It's concern about where the media is headed. I mean, it is being so weaponized. But I get your point. I mean, but what? How does that happen if the media is controlled by the ruling class?
How does it happen? Like what you just described, like the people with all of the money are propping up these weaponized outlets.
How do you get rid of the cat in your scenario?
Get rid of capitalism.
Mm-hmm. And how do you do that without any access to the media?
Difficult, not impossible.
All right. Well, maybe folks will have to tune into the fun hat.
Patreon.com/majority. That's how I do that.
We shall see. I mean, it's possible.
I mean, I kind of think that the right is doing this because they know that they have to, in a way that the left doesn't. I mean, I don't think that there's any money for this on the left anywhere. I can't imagine who would fund this sort of projects. I mean, maybe George Clooney is a leftist underneath it or something, but...
Yeah, but he doesn't have that kind of money.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just not going to happen.
You don't become a billionaire and... are okay with some type of populist medium.
But if everything was equal, they know they would lose. So they know they need to invest this kind of cash.
Yes, I think that's true. I definitely think that's true. And they're doing it, and then you get stuff like, I mean, look, I think you could, there's a big difference between a FCC chair who says, we're going to maintain 30% clearance rules across the country versus 70% under some type of UHF thing. And that Sinclair Media is going to make a big difference. I think there's a big difference between a Bill Clinton who signs the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and under Kennedy, who had an FCC chair who said this is a vast wasteland. I think that fundamentally implicates our media. You know, getting rid of the fairness doctrine fundamentally implicates our media. I mean, so there isn't, it's not just, you know, in my mind anyways, you got to get the cat out of the house necessarily. You can do certain things like, hey, you know, you can't go in this room, or I'm not going to put the good furniture in with the room, or, you know, maybe we'll file your claws down. Is that what people do with cats? Don't they do that? Declaw cats? I don't do that. I don't want to get into like an animal cruelty thing here. I'm just saying, theoretically, there are other things you could do. You could put in cat gloves.
It doesn't work on cats, and it doesn't work on the ruling class.
I may have to get a different sound effect.
You know what's sad? So Kim Phillips Fine, who we had on for that Destroy New York book, Fear City, yes. I think it was called. She also did a book called Invisible Hands about sort of the early right wing and like DuPont against FDR type of thing. And the sad thing is FDR, they had all these sort of groups and front groups like what we now see as American Enterprise Institute. And FDR had everybody wise to it, and people would laugh at these groups. And like, I don't know if we can somehow reach a point where we don't trust this bullshit anymore, and more, less and less people trust it. Like, I'm not sure how. I think that's what needs to happen, though.
One of the complaints that was certainly out there at the time, and you know, you hear some people talking about it, is that Obama's project was more focused on policy. I mean, put aside what people presume about Obama's politics for a moment, that the decision to push policy over politics upon getting into office was one that is has been very difficult for the left, I think. Which is not to say that Obama's politics are, anything more than, you know, sort of like maybe center left. But the idea that, you know, he had said, I want to be like Ronald Reagan, or he had said that I admired Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, as much as the policy damage he did, it was more he did the damage of, you know, spawning really much of what we see now because of just rhetoric and disposition. So I gotta take a nap. Instead, we're gonna go into the fun half, folks. 646-257-3920 is the number. Just a reminder, your membership makes this show possible. In between arguing with George Soros, when I tell him to stop giving us so much money, I don't want him. Here's the dilemma, folks. I don't want Soros to feel like he controls this. So you have to kick up. No, our members provide us 96.3% of our revenue. So if you have the financial means, become a member today. And as a thank you, we give you more more material and commercial free on days and we have commercials. It's commercial free for you. And we're going to up our website soon. We have a free app, all of these things, folks. And don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use your coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you're buying your crap from Amazon, the least you can do is buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. We got a Jet link there as well. And if you feel like you have not gotten your fill of Michael because he's taken one of his flash vacations again, just sort of ups and go like, oh, yeah, did I mention that to you? You were here that day, right?
Yeah, I've been here for a couple of those days.
Oh, I didn't mention to you that I was taking 8 days off in the first 3 weeks of October. But if you miss them, you can go and check out last night's The Michael Brooks Show, which you can sign up for on iTunes or see on our YouTube channel. All right, 646-257-3920. We got a new one. Which one is this? Oh, the ska version. All right.